gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, you are listening to Broken But Glorious!
Hulk Hogan, Hollywood Hulkster, whatever they call you, I'm coming after you, you coward!
Hello and welcome to Broken But Glorious. I'm Chris Lapp and I'm delighted to be joined by the biggest parter of the summer, Nick Davey.
Oh, good evening.
And three-time wrestling author, Oliver Newman.
Good evening. Did you say it was the biggest partier of the summer?
Yeah.
Okay.
That is a true fact, though.
It's the only way I can think of making the way it work. I was like, the biggest party host of the summer? Biggest part... Yeah, it worked out.
Biggest partier. Yeah. That works.
Yeah, and we're also joined by the Grapple Arcade's Mark Fox. How are you doing, Stephen, Mark?
I'm well, mate. I'm good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Yeah. Goodbye. Welcome back. Welcome back.
You deserve yeah, send this.
Send this off. It's great to have you back, Mark.
Good to be back, lads. Been a bit of a break from it all. Focused on some live events and stuff and other bits and pieces, but... really nice to be back and hopefully something do a bit more regular from now on.
Yeah, so how's things at Grapple Arcade?
Wicked, mate, yeah. Like, quite a lot of changes, quite a number of different things, really, but we've just had a big event for the Retro Games event, NERG, up in Gateshead, which was awesome. We did a big massive WrestleFest arcade competition and tournament.
Brilliant.
Wow.
Went really well, so we've taken that on tour, hopefully, as time goes on. We've got the machine up and running now. Yeah, just sort of growing nicely in different areas and doing different things with it. It's been full of random events. I mean, this weekend we've got SummerSlam coming up, the SummerSlam pay-per-view party that we put on the casino up here. So, hence why we're getting on board with this one tonight to talk about some SummerSlamage.
Hooray!
Indeed.
The big question, though, Mark, is when's Grapple Arcade coming to Birmingham?
Oh, well. I don't know, mate. I don't know.
People want to know, Mark.
Just say, never. No, I'm joking.
if you book us, we will come.
Is that a come and get me, please, to Birmingham?
It's like a sort of Waynesville reference stroke Dennis Stamp. Just book me, Terry. Book me, Oliver.
I'll see if I can contact the Blues chairman, see what I can do.
I wouldn't do that if I was you. I think he's still appalled about what he had to watch on Sky last night.
I wondered how long it'd take you to say that, Nick. I thought me and you were being nice to each other when you didn't mention Brighton on the previous podcast, but now you're going to make it personal, Nick.
Right, so
that's what happens when you give the youngsters a chance. They did well, to be fair, until the first goal went in. It was all downhill from
there.
Welcome
to the V2 Football Podcast.
So we have a big announcement. We will be merging with the Turntuckle Podcast and Grapple Arcade's other shows. So, Mark, what should the listeners expect from Grapple Arcade Turntuckle content?
A lot of joy in addition to what they already get from BBG in general.
Yeah.
So Turnchuckle is very much a early to mid-90s themed kind of podcast. It's not necessarily reviews as such or anything like that, but there's a lot of interviews with former WWF stars such as Ahmed Johnson, Barry Horowitz, Savio Vega, to name a few, and a few others have been on the show. So it's more of a focus on that kind of thing. There will be some more regular sort of chats as well, so there'll be some specific themes about different things. I know that we were thinking about doing one about the Lex Express recently, so random bits and bobs, tidbits from years gone by that we might resurrect and talk about, and some random knowledge, because the sort of the originator of Turntuckle, Pablo, and Paul, also other people, He's a bit of a brain box when it comes to sort of the very early 90s to the mid 90s. He's a bit of a walking encyclopedia about the 90s WWF. and his knowledge is pretty second to none, to be honest, and he puts me to shame, to be completely fair. So it's not something he likes to admit, but something I do think he deserves credit for. He's very good historian when it comes to that stuff. So that's the turnchuckle side of things. There'll be lots of interesting stuff around that. The Grapple Arcade stuff, we do quite a lot of filming of our live gaming events, specifically the wrestling gaming events and the after parties that we run. As well as that, we do a lot of stuff regarding old school merchandise. So if any of the viewers, any of your listeners are familiar with our setups, they'll know that we do a retrospective look at old, very early 1990s WWF Merlin sticker books, where we get wrestlers to open packets of sealed stickers from the early 90s and see if we can complete the book.
Yeah.
We started that a while ago. We've only uploaded 2 episodes so far. But we've got quite a lot of editing to do, so there'll be a lot more of those coming. As well as old school merchandise in general. Like, we had a show recently looking at old school ECW wrestling figures, the whole history and line of it, with special guests with Joel Gertner from ECW and Steve Corino made a bit of an appearance as well.
That was
so quite fun. Some quite good fun stuff. Plan to do a lot more of that in the future, but it's, again, with everything, it's just finding the time. So hopefully the link in between the Grapple Arcade stuff, the Turntrickle stuff, and joining the BBG sort of network, so to speak, will give us that sort of kick in the right direction and revive it a little bit. Because I think there's a lot of stuff that you guys do that cross over well with what we do. And also, it just brings new audiences to what each other do, and hopefully there'll be a bit of growth for everybody involved.
Yeah, definitely. I said Pablo's a great guy. I met him at the Full of a Wrestling event, and he was lots of fun.
He's like a sort of, he's just like a sort of a rabbit on pills.
Rabbit.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, he's... he'll just run, like, we were chatting, talking to him, and he was like, 2 seconds, there's Goldust, or whatever, and then he just runs off in a direction to somebody who's dressed as Goldust, just so he can talk to them about the Hollywood Backward Brawl, you know what I mean? He's nuts, man, he's great, he's absolutely amazing. And he'll be like, hold on a second, mainly because he's seen that Ted DiBiase's taking a break from his signing booth desk, and he'll run over there just to kind of just to baffle him. He was the other guy that when we were at for the Love of Wrestling event last year, we managed to corner Sid Justice for 5 minutes and batter his head and talk to him about sausages. So just it's nonsense, but it's great fun. It's good fun.
And you managed to get...
Is Pablo like the character that Paul London-based his Lucha Underground character on?
Could well be, yeah. Yeah, you never know. You never know. Hopefully he'll be available. We'll maybe try and arrange an episode, as we were saying before, lads, where the three of yous and me and Pablo jump on together for a sort of five-way discussion about some random nonsense, and we'll see how it goes. It'll probably be completely incoherent and here, there, and everywhere, but it might work well for a sort of a half an hour random out there show.
Yeah,
on something else that we're doing.
Yeah, I think it's
like I said off air, we should start taping what we say off air, put it on the podcast. No, I'll tell you what, people, when you listen to this, you're missing out on what we say off air.
Yeah, luckily we're missing out on liability suits as well based on that, so, you know.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really excited for this.
Yeah, man, absolutely.
We're one big family.
It just goes to show that BBGW Pod is, you know, doing amazing things, and that's great, really.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. And we owe it all to me.
What's your idea?
Thank you, Nick. Thank you so much, Nick.
Yeah, we couldn't have done it without you, Nick.
I'm joking. Thank you, Chris.
No, it was your idea to do a wrestling podcast.
Oh, well, we could be here all night.
I just can't.
Well, so far, you've just praised you two. What about me?
Moving on.
I'll listen to both of you.
On this show, we'll be counting down our top 10 SummerSlam matches, and we've all picked two of our favourite matches each. and then our Twitter followers have picked the top two from a poll we put up last week. But before we do the countdown, I'm very pleased to announce we've got a partnership with Wrestling Resurgence. Great promotion.
Oh, we've got partnerships left, right and centre.
Great promotion based out of Leicester. We interviewed the producer, Sam West, earlier this year. Great guy. So on the 31st of August, they have a double main event for their show. Their champion, Gene Money, against Chris Brooks. A great match.
And then Chris Brooks.
Then they've got an Iron Woman match between Kanji and Charlie Evans, which is going to be an amazing match as well. So we'll be interviewing Kanji to promote the show next week, and you can get 50% off Wrestling Resurgent merchandise and tickets for upcoming shows by using the promo code Broken15. The link will be in the description to their store.
This is the leader of the rejected Demon Eye. You are listening to Broken But Glorious.
So it's time for our top 10 SummerSlam matches. They're in no particular order. We've just chosen our two favourite matches. So who wants to go first?
I'll go first if you want, Chris.
Okay, all right. Okay.
Well, volunteered.
So what's your first match?
And it's not in any order, is it?
Nope.
Okay. We'll go Punk versus Jeff Hardy. Mm-hmm. CM Punk versus Jeff Hardy from SummerSlam 2009, and it was a TLC match, if I recall.
It's your favourite match.
I'm not sure if it was like about this match and stuff. I think it was just a feud in general from CM Punk and Jeff. CM Punk wins the title after cashing in Money in the Bank at Extreme Rules when Jeff Hardy and Edge had a ladder match. Mm-hmm. And then Jeff Hardy and CM Punk had a number of matches over the summer of 2009, which is a bloody good summer for SmackDown. SmackDown, I think, because Rey Mysterio and Chris Jericho fought over the Intercontinental title, didn't they? And through all the time, like, could he trust him? He feigned an eye injury, CM Punk. Dressed like Jeff Hardy, and it was just amazing because you thought he was Jeff Hardy. The feud allowed him to put across the straight edge side of him that was in Ring of Honor and really turned him into the company's biggest bad guy, both in Ring of Honor and I'd say so in WWE. The straight edge society that came, that was part of this, but spawned afterwards as well, was all due to this. And the match itself is just fantastic. Jeff Hardy's allowed to be the crazy, risk-taking, leave it all in the ring Jeff Hardy. CM Punk is, strategic and tries to win the match. And then, obviously, you've got the cage match on SmackDown because Jeff Hardy failed his third drugs test and was and left the company after the cage match. So I think it's one of my favourite SummerSlam matches because of the feud in general. There was, like, the quality of matches all the way along in the summer was really good. SummerSlam match was superb as well. And the feud, I would recommend it to anyone. Definitely go back and watch CM Punk versus Jeff Hardy in 2009. It was absolutely fantastic.
I'll go for the 2002 match between Triple H and Shawn Michaels. To all our diehard listeners, you remember I did this match on our pre-Extreme Rules show and we did the top five hardcore matches. Feel free to go back and watch that show at any time. Just as I say, loved the feud obviously between Triple H and Shawn Michaels with obviously, Shawn Michaels making his return, Triple H then attacking Shawn. All brilliant build, but the match itself was, as I say, extremely brutal at times. And I thought it was just, I think, to be fair as well, this SummerSlam 2002, if you've mentioned this on the show before, if you're ever in doubt about watching anything on the WWE Network, I just keep reiterating, this is just such a strong card. Probably one of the best SummerSlams of all time, I'd say, 2002.
Yeah, definitely.
It was an incredibly strong card, and I just thought this match just really took the whole show to a next level. It was two guys still went in their prime as well. So, and I'll say it was brutal at times, but then we also got what Shawn Michaels is. I just loved the obviously the counter to get the pinfall, which I thought was brilliant. And then just when you think the match is over, the probably one of the most, I'm trying to find the word for this, probably one of the most shivery spots, I guess, when Triple H hit him with the sledgehammer. That was just brutal.
Yeah.
especially for the young me watching it, really great. And I say, I always say about having a bloodbath isn't always great in matches. I know we really praised it recently on with the Cody Dustin match. I thought this really helped as well. Blood really, really was just, it really helped to what was a fantastic main event. And as I say, one of my favourite SummerSlam matches of all time. So, yeah, that'll be my one.
Wasn't it Shawn Michaels' first match for like 4 or 5 years as well?
Correct. And yeah. I think people were in a bit of low expectation. You get it these days when they roll the wrestlers back out to have their matches, you do worry. But that was just great. Really, really great. Didn't look like he missed a beat, did he? It was still completely faultless. I know when you have hardcore matches, arguably you can say they're obviously not so easy to come back into, but it doesn't require as too many obviously fast paced moments, because theoretically you get more of a rest because your opponent has to sell the injuries and what have you. So, but I thought, yeah, it was great. He looked like he didn't miss a beat.
Hey Mark, do you want to go next?
Yeah, man. Yeah. Well, interesting. You should talk about the way you mentioned about the hardcore there, mate, Nick, because I think the match I'm going for is my first out of the two options is Mankind versus Undertaker.
Oh, yes.
It's SummerSlam 96. The Boiler Room Brawl.
I was 2 years old then.
Full 2 years old. Boiler Room Brawl. I was at my gran's house.
Is she a diehard wrestling fan?
Well, we'll get to that story another day, but she did watch a lot of wrestling. She did watch a lot of wrestling with me. Her dad used to be a doorman for wrestling events around Scotland and England in the 30s and the 40s. So, yeah, quite a lineage in it. But,
crunchy.
Yeah, it's a bit crazy. But, anyway, this was pretty... It pretty much set the standard, this match, in terms of hardcore wrestling matches in WWE. Going forward, it was the first kind of introduction to weapons galore in the new generation, so to speak. We'd seen a couple of bits and bobs before. You know, when you think about it, it was only a year before that, really, when we were seeing the big bumps off the ladder matches between Shawn and Razor.
Yeah.
So to then jump a year later and have a Boiler Room Brawl, which involved, mate, it was Mick Foley, when you think about it, when he was at his fittest, so to speak, when he was in WWE, WWF terms.
Yeah.
He was bumping like crazy, and people didn't really... People maybe didn't remember, people maybe don't remember, compared to his later years when he was the Hell in a Cell style Foley, chucking himself up big objects and slicing himself open with barbed wire. This was like, he was taking some pretty brutal bumps in this match. And Taker trusted him with a lot as well, because Taker took a couple of big nasty bumps himself. Like, there was like a pull power driver, for example, on an exposed concrete floor outside the ring. You don't see Undertaker take many pile drivers, let alone on a concrete floor. So Taker put a lot of trust in Foley with this match. And I just think the story to this was absolutely fantastic, as well as the type of match that it was, which told a really good story. For those who don't know, the Boiler Room section of this was pre-taped the night before on the Saturday. So it wasn't all live as it was played out. But it was one of the better filmed versions of the whole, let's make it look real, let's film it backstage, let's show a video of it being pre-filmed, but everybody thinks it's live. So the audience assumed it was live, especially the way that they tumbled out into the arena. It looked really, it looked authentic, looked realistic. Everything from The Undertaker just walking, the way it was done was brilliant. Paul Bearer coming down to the ring, to the music, and it cutting to Taker standing backstage with a ref opening the door for him to enter the Boiler Room, and him searching for quite a while, looking behind pipes and pillars, looking for Foley until, you know, it must have been a good few minutes in before Foley made his appearance and attacked him and came out on the attack with what looked like a cardboard tube. Now in HD. Back then it was grainy, grainy TV tape, so it looked like a metal lead pipe, but now when you look back, it looked like a poster tube. but I'd still take it as merchandise. But yeah, it was one of those things where it was just perfect. It was just done really, really well. A little back and forth backstage. Foley got, I'd say Foley probably got the better of the backstage situation in terms of how much he was learning to take it. But he made his bumps look brutal, as you'd expect. And it was the first time in WWF years, especially in the 90s, that I'd seen somebody fall and hit the ground with a thud like Foley could. He could make things look so real and painful back then, because they were. But he went out of his way to make it not look protected. And that added to everything with this match, that made this match what it was. So yeah, the match was great for what it was, and then eventually it went into the ring, and the ending to this match is probably one of the most infamous endings to a match in terms of a turn, because we got Paul Bearer turning on The Undertaker, which was never expected. Nobody saw that coming. I didn't as a mid-teen watching that match. I never would have expected that forever. It was the way he turned away and you thought, what's this about? And then he clubbed him. And it was, you weren't exposed to that as much back then, especially with the loyalty of Paul Bearer.
For the whole 6 years he'd been in WWF, it was The Undertaker and Paul Bearer.
There was no hint of anything. There was nothing. There was no kind of hint of discussion or aroused. There was no falling out, there was no bickering, there was nothing that would ever make you believe that was going to happen, and especially in a storyline such as this with Mankind as well. There was no inkling for me that there was going to be a turn, which made it fantastic. And then Taker obviously taken away by the Druids and whatnot, as he does, and he wasn't away for very long following that, but I think in fact he was back on TV the next night. Float away to the Druids that had to get his stitches sewed up and then back on the TV. But this was incredible. Just fantastic. So yeah, that was my number one of the two choices.
There was a bit in that SummerSlam where they did a promo before the match and Mankind started licking pipes and it's rank. He must have tasted disgusting. I was like,
He nailed it. He made that match feel real, if that makes it.
Yeah.
You weren't just watching a match, you were feeling it in terms of the, as you say, even things like tasting the rotten pipes in a boiler room.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's clearly a set design, but it everything felt really real.
Yeah.
Everything felt like, not real as in, you know, a shoot match or anything like that, but real as in the atmosphere, the vibe, the crowd loved it. It was weird, which was perfect
for
Mankind versus The Undertaker, you know.
And can I just ask a quick question to Mark? Are we kind of underrating Mick Foley as a professional wrestler? Because if you look at what he's done for other people, and you look at the kind of matches that he's been in, and the different styles, the different characters he's been, do you think he's one of the best of all time?
I think in terms of what he offers his opponents, I think he undoubtedly is the most selfless. He's the most who's willing to give the opponent his absolute all and make it seem real and genuine. He's got a great attack as well for his style of wrestling. It's fantastic. That running knee that he does into the corner, you know what I mean? When the opponent's in Bronco. Corpus-esque kind of sitting down in a corner and he runs with a full force knee. Some of his attacks are fantastic. I do agree. I think he's up there. I just think he maybe gets overlooked because of his, dare I say, his personality after his retirement and things like that. I think people judge that and cloud a little bit of their judgment about who he is as a performer or who he was as a performer because, yeah. I thought it was fantastic, and especially for me, I personally believe his WCW. I've seen some of his Japanese stuff and his deathmatch stuff, but I think his and even his ECW stuff. But I think a good fair chunk of his WCW Cactus Jack run, and his early sort of 3 years or so, two, three years as Mankind in WWF is some of the best work you'll see from a performer.
For me, I really loved early Mankind, and
the music
is just hauntingly beautiful.
It's incredible. The difference between the intro music and the outro music as well, both being different themes. You know, the outro winning music, so to speak, is a calm, collected piano piece, whereas the intro coming in is that sort of slightly sinister twist to it all, clown-esque. But sorry, Chris, completely...
I just had to ask that question.
Right, so my first match is, you kind of mentioned it, Shawn Michaels versus Razor Ramon, ladder match for the Intercontinental Championship. SummerSlam 1995. this may be an old
SummerSlam, what year?
1995.
Yeah, the year before.
I was only one year old.
So this may be an unpopular opinion, but I think this match is superior to the WrestleMania 10 bout.
I was going to ask you that question, actually, Chris. I think it is too.
Yeah.
I don't think it's an unpopular opinion, you know. I think as time's gone on, people prefer the SummerSlam. I've seen more and more people granted they prefer the SummerSlam.
Yeah, I feel both Michaels.
I think they're both fantastic.
So I'll just say why I thought it was superior. So I feel that both Michaels and Ramon were better performers a year on. The psychology and the storytelling, the SummerSlam match was much sounder than I thought. So I think they could go into the SummerSlam match without the handcuffs of. And it could be freer with the storytelling because it's the second, it's not the first ladder match anymore. And despite both guys going into the match's faces, Ramon was much more aggressive and he worked the majority of the match more heelish, targeting Michael's knee, which was amazing. Then Michael demonstrated his toughness, getting away from his sexy boy image as he fought back considerable pain and ultimately emerged victorious, getting his win back from Ramon at WrestleMania. So the match that came second in our Twitter poll was the Dudley Boys versus the Hardy Boys versus Edge and Christian, the first ever TLC match, SummerSlam 2000. So WWE were willing to put up the risk factor during the Attitude Era. And this was, as I said, the first ever TLC, Tables, Ladders, and Chairs, which took the feud up to a different level, I thought.
It was magnificent. Just a cracking display of what the guys in the ring could do. I mean, to a lot of people, myself included, we'd seen, you know, attempts at things. I was an ECW fan, more respectively, but saw some of the late 90s stuff through some tapes I got a hold of. So you got used to some chair matches, table matches, things like that. But nothing was pulled together and orchestrated quite like that first TLC match to that point, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of it looking amazingly good. All the weapons being used effectively, the people in the ring all having a fantastic ability, and it all running really, really smoothly, but with that air of, oh my God, it's all going to go wrong.
Yeah,
it all takes one slip, you know? And it was an edge on your seat kind of match, you know? It was a cracking match.
Yeah, and in the build-up, they said, well, the Hardys are the ladder guys, and the Buckleys are the table guys, and the Concerto with Edge and Christian. So they all had their weapons. It made sense to make it into a TLC match.
It was wonderful. Great idea.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
Absolutely.
What I would wish they would do going forward, whilst it is a match, I did also really enjoy the WrestleMania 17 match as well. I think WrestleMania 17 was slightly better, just my opinion. I think largely due to that Edge spear on Jeff Hardy. I thought that was just one of my favourite WrestleMania moments in a match. I thought it was great. But what I would like to see them do, if they're going to keep doing the TLC pay-per-view, I'd like every year they just have one of the tag titles as the main event with a TLC match. Because I think TLC, I think I've said it on the show before, TLC's done it at its best when it's not a one-on-one match, because one-on-one, it just works so much better when it is obviously multiple men in it, and it works as best when it is with tag team. I think it's just a simple way of really giving that tag team belt was that legitimacy. It just makes everything. I just think every year they should have the titles, maybe even build the pay-per-view around the tag titles. You can even have the build up, but really just put those tag titles over. That's just my personal opinion.
I agree with that, and I think one thing that I personally believe from watching ladder matches or whatever from years ago by, like the single competitors who, where there's multiple of them, sort of six or eight or whatever in the ring in a multi-man ladder match. It just seems very clustery. It just seems kind of unorganized chaos and a bit messy and then all of a sudden very spotty and written, if you know what I mean, choreographed. Whereas the tag team variant, especially with that, yes, it was obviously choreographed. You could, you know, there was moments where it was obviously very spotty, but it felt a bit more authentic and yes, it felt real and it felt a bit more legitimate. Like he's just randomly running over there to give him a kick and out of nowhere. And then do you know what I mean? It felt real. It felt a bit more realistic. And I think with having the tag team, it kind of gives people legitimate breathers, so then you can focus on what's happening in the ring rather than wondering why that guy's still there down in the corner 10 minutes later after all you did was take like a DDT or something, you know?
Yeah,
and you question, why is he still out of the action? Why is he not back in yet? Whereas in the tag team thing, especially when there's three teams, there's more reasoning for those rest breaks because it's a tag match. So, yeah, well, not a tag match, but you know what I mean. It seems more real.
Yeah, it makes them better if they're fighting on the outside rather than just all lying around doing nothing.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, and I think that's what they managed to get over really well in both of those TLC matches with the same guys is that it felt more it just worked, it just gelled, it was a lot more smooth. It's maybe because they were better performers than they've been in since then. Who knows? But it just felt better, and I think I agree with you, Nick. I think if they're going to do it going forward, I like the idea of having three-way, maybe a three-way sort of TLC matches and going down that route. I think it would be a good idea.
It'd be great if they did it these days, if they had the Usos, Officer Payne, and New Day do it or something.
There's plenty of teams there who could put on a fantastic display in that setting.
The Revival as well, but they don't want to climb the ladders, like Regal and Dave Taylor from way back when. Armageddon 2006 ladder match with Eminem and the Hardys and Paul London and Brian Kendrick and Regal and Taylor.
That's it.
Do you think that psychology is better in tag team TLC matches as opposed to single matches, Nick and Mark? Yeah.
For me, it seems to be, from what I've seen, personally.
Yeah. There's not really been many classic one-on-one TLC matches, I don't think, whereas when there's more multiple men than there is.
I didn't want to agree with Nick because of what he said earlier. but I do agree that the WrestleMania 17 match was better, and I think it was better because it involved more people. Spike Dudley, Rhino, Lita.
Oh, I love
I thought it was fantastic, but I think the best I think the best tag team TLC match was TLC 4 that was on SmackDown, I think, way back when.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you mentioned it interesting regarding the psychology side of things. When you think about it, when they say for example three teams in a ring, okay, so out of those three teams in particular, two of the competitors are a tag team, so they know each other inside out, generally speaking. They know how each other work and how each other move. They've got the benefit of speaking to each other constantly beforehand and planning everything in their heads and knowing what they're going to do.
Yeah.
So you've got that times three. And then on top of that, because it's a tag team match, the tag division are used to working with each other a lot. So then they're constantly they know each other's skills and strengths and they work with each other quite well. But when you see the singles matches, say six or seven competitors in a match who aren't always necessarily wrestling with each other, and you've got like Ziggler in there randomly against Styles or whoever, you know what I mean? It's more seven random guys where two of them might be feuding and the others are kind of filling up the numbers to make it a spectacle.
Yeah.
There isn't that automatic connection between them and it doesn't flow quite as well for me. They should arguably be able to flow better. They should be able to work that well, but at the same time, you know, it's like putting a team of people together to play a footy match or whatever who've been playing with each other for years and years and years compared to just chucking a random bunch of guys who don't really know. You know, do you see what I mean? It's kind of, with the psychology side of things, using people who are used to working with each other, whether they're in a tag team together or just being on the tag team scene, wrestling each other a lot. just gels more.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from, Mark.
The countdown will continue in a minute. I just want to mention that we've now launched our website, brokenbutglorious.com, where you can find not only our podcasts and our interviews, but the latest news on WWE, New Japan, Impact Wrestling, MLW, Progress, and the rest of the British scene. So check it out.
Hi, my name's Alan Kate, and you're listening to the Broken But Glorious Wrestling Podcast. Enjoy it, you scumbags.
So who's next? Oliver, your second match, please.
Yeah, so my match is the match that made me a fan. For anyone who knows me, they know this. And for anyone who doesn't, it's part of my book, Fans' Perspective, One Man's Exploration of British Wrestling. Available on paperback and Kindle on there. but yeah, it's Mr. Perfect versus Bret the Hitman Hart from SummerSlam 1991. And basically, for me, this was the match, the, you know, the pump, the circumstance, Perfect. Find that years later, Perfect had a severely damaged lower back, kind of like when Shawn Michaels injured his back against Undertaker in the casket match at Royal Rumble 98. That kind of severely damaged back, and he still wanted to wrestle Bret the Hitman Hart to get into the next level. Mm-hmm. The performance he put in is nothing short of extraordinary. Bret Hart matched him every step of the way, and they just wrestled a fantastic match. You know, you can watch it now and it still stands up, and we're talking, this is 28 years later almost, at the end of, towards the end of August, and it's just fantastic, in all honesty. I'm going to take this, and I'm going to say they had a match at King of the Ring 1993, the semi-final.
Yes.
And I think that match is even better.
Yeah.
So they just created, you know, I don't know what you could say. If the first match was magic, then the second match was like catching lightning in a bottle. Yeah, Bret Hart winning the Intercontinental title. For me, the pink and black, the shades, he's such a cool guy. Lot of respect for Perfect. Probably hated him at the time because that's what you're supposed to do. But, you know, watching him years later and, you know, when he come back for Royal Rumble 2002, desperately hoping he'd get that run because his performance in the Rumble was superb. It's a real shame that he didn't get the run from there because I think he really could have done something. Yeah, just a really superb match. Counters, reversals, the leg drop caught into the sharpshooter, and then a Perfect kind of, you know, submits. Just a fantastic ending, which actually happened in a British wrestling match between Marcus Cole and the metrosexual Danny Devine. They used that as one of the finishes in a 2 out of 3 falls match at Aston Uni years ago, which is in my my second book, A Fan's Perspective, How My Lifelong Dream Became a Nightmare, sorry, third book, which is available back in Kindle and stuff. So, yeah, when people are using that finish years later, then you know it's a fantastic finish. The match, like I said, I'm so pumped up about it. I could go and watch it, you know, when we finish this podcast, because it is a fantastic match. And when I say that the King of the Ring semi-final match is even better, then if you're a pro wrestling fan, you know, once you've finished listening to this podcast, you probably need to watch both matches back to back and then see if I'm right.
Yeah, definitely a great choice. So, Nick, do you want to go next? You next?
Right, my second and final pick is the one, the only. It's the match from SummerSlam 2013, CM Punk versus the reigning, defending, undisputed champion, Brock Lesnar.
Paul Heyman's on the podcast.
It was a great match. But again, I like some of the trends of SummerSlam 2012 in
modern title. I'd say this was probably the best SummerSlam in modern memory, 2013. I thought it was an overall very strong card, along with, obviously, with the ending with Triple H turning heel, signing with Orton and everything. But the match itself, Brock Punk, obviously we had Heyman turning on CM Punk back at Money in the Bank. I think it was the pay-per-view before where he cost CM Punk the chance to win Money in the Bank, or become Mr. Money in the Bank. And then, yeah, I mean, the whole build-up, it was like, oh, crap, is Brock just literally going to have to do a two-minute squash on Punk? It was like, will Punk be able to actually compete with big men? And I think this, again, proved, I think this set the standard for Brock's matches since he's returned. I 100% think this is Brock's best match since he came back to WWE. And, in fact, probably one of, I'd say, CM Punk's second best match during his career in WWE. I think it was just a fantastic match. And it proves again how well Brock works with the smaller guys. Because we've seen him, I think his better matches do come against the guys like we've seen him with Styles, Balor, Cena. I think they do come against the slightly smaller guys.
David and Goliath kind of approach.
Yeah, and I thought it was just brilliant because you had times where you like, really got into it as a fan. I thought this match with, oh, crikey, Punk's actually going to do it. This is great. You really get, and you almost felt like as Brock was still in that stage where WWE building him as a beast, the fans were still loving both men. Punk's obviously everyone's favourite. It really was one of those ones where it could have gone either way, and I think either winner, no one would have really cared. It wouldn't have done a harm on either superstar.
No.
So it's one of those matches that it's just so easy for the fans to get involved in, and just some of the spots were great. I know this was the year before Suplex City, I think, so it was the year later where Brock squashed Cena in like 20 in like a short amount of time. But I think this was the match where you really did have, obviously we saw how deadly Brock was with the suplexes, and then I think it was when Punk tried to get out of the Kimura lock as well in this match. I think was quite a good spot from memory. It was just all a very good match. It just have you kind of on the edge of your seat, like, oh crikey, Punk's actually gonna do this, or on that, on the flip side, you're like, oh god, Punk's gonna actually get killed here. So one of those ones, and it was just a really great match. And again, SummerSlam 2013, another one if you're a bit of a loose end on your Saturday or Sunday waiting for SummerSlam. Another SummerSlam to go back and watch, in my opinion.
An interesting tidbit there, Nick, is if Heyman hadn't have cost Punk, then he would have been a three-time Money in the Bank winner.
Correct.
What year was this match again, Nick?
2013.
2013, so I'm guessing you were about four, were you?
Well, how old was I? I think I was 19 at the time.
19.
And you think this match was better than Cena versus Lesnar from Extreme Rules, Nick?
100%.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's pretty up for discussion, that, but both matches were great, but I just preferred this in the sense that, probably more because of I didn't want Cena winning that match. Maybe I'm biased towards this match. This match probably got the correct winner, in a sense, and a match that didn't damage either of them. Whereas, yeah, we could be here all night. So I'll pass on the bat to Mark.
Yeah, nice one. I think whether we're fortunately or unfortunately, yourself and the listeners can decide that. I'm going to be bowling Shawn Michaels' third appearance into our six
yes.
for the night, lads. I think that's right, isn't it?
Mr. SummerSlam.
I think, yeah, I think you've
no,
been
no,
bowling
no.
it.
This is Bret Hart, Mr. SummerSlam.
Yeah, this is third appearance.
Yeah, I think Nick picked one. I think Chris picked one, and he's now in mine as well, I think. So, yeah, that's three. So, yeah, I'm going for another 1996 SummerSlam. It's all about 1996, baby. where it's the match that came, where it was directly after, it was back-to-back with the Boiler Room Brawl, which was what a spectacle of a double main event, considering the rest of the card was absolutely shit. It was terrible. It was absolutely horrid.
It
was absolutely shockingly bad.
The opening match? That opening, was it like a fatal four-way elimination tag match?
The whole thing was horrendous. It was a terrible... Chris, it was a throwaway SummerSlam, probably one of the worst SummerSlams, I dare say.
Chris Candice had a broken neck, so he didn't even get in the match. He was just on the...
The whole thing was shocking. However, the two
didn't
final...
have missed the SummerSlam money, that's why.
That's probably what it was. But the two main events, if you want to call them, are the core main events as far as I'm concerned. Absolutely smashed it, and both of them would have, I think, probably been at the top of the vast majority of other pay-per-views in the 90s, to be quite honest, if not more so than that. I think where Sean was coming down with Jose Lothario, and Vader was with Cornette, so there's obviously going to be some jiggery pokery going on with this match. Before it even began, it was going to be one of those kind of matches where, okay, it's not going to be a straight, clean-cut match here. But the match itself, the quality of the match, was really, really top draw. And you've got to expect that from Sean. He can carry the best of anybody. He can, and that's no disrespect to Vader. Vader made a couple of mistakes in the match, shall we say,
yeah,
which included an audible shout from Shawn Michaels telling him to get up at one point because he forgot his cue on a couple of occasions. But much like was said before in Nick's commentary about Lesnar working well with a smaller guy, I also think that Shawn Michaels works best against a bigger guy. I think that's the matches that I like to see Shawn in. I'd have loved to have seen an at-peak Brock Lesnar versus an at-peak Shawn Michaels. I can't think of anything that would have been more spectacular than that, to be quite honest. As a showman event, you know, because both can go anyway. But the problem.
Well, Lesnar can throw him around.
Oh God, it would have been and it would have taken like a try. It would have been fantastic. But let's be honest, he probably wouldn't have been allowed to have, you know, got as many suplexes in.
Michael's doing that sell that he did against Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, well.
I was going to say about Hogan then.
That was SummerSlam, wasn't it?
Well, Michaels was a face champion going into this one. Vader was in, I think he'd just been about a year in by this point, and yeah, he'd had a monster of a year as well, as this unstoppable monster kind of Vader, following his departure from being champion in WCW. So he was coming in here with a lot of credentials, you know. He wasn't just some random big guy that you chuck against Hogan in the late 80s. You know, he was Vader. He was coming in. People thought, my God, he is going to be the dominant force going forward. Now, this match, for all it was a fantastic match, probably was the start of the demise of Vader. So the match itself was fantastic. It was back and forth all match. False finishes galore. At one point, Vader won due to a count out. Cornette shouted at Michaels to stop being a chicken shit and get back down to ringside because he wanted him to crack on with the match and stop being scared of Vader. He hobbled back out and had the two and fro with him then. Both guys kicked out of each other's finishers. Well, kind of. Both guys were meant to kick out of each other's finishers. Vader forgot to kick out of an early Sweet Chin Music, and Clever Hebner was on ball there to make sure that he didn't count the third count because he knew that wasn't the finish.
Yeah.
So well done to the ref there. So, the match itself was brilliant in terms of just sheer energy from Michaels getting clobbered by Vader. Vader bringing the hard intensity, forearm smashes and whatnot, you know, just laying it into Sean and Sean taking it, which is what you wanted to see. I know that, but I'm trying to think now. Was it during Cornette was shouting Michaels out? I know that Monsoon came back down as well to order that the match was restarted as well. So, yeah, it was one of those. It was just a good out and out match. It was really, really good with a lot of passion involved. And Shawn Michaels on tip top form, selling for a beast. Brilliant. Can't ask for any more than that. The false finishes, I don't know if they were needed as such. I think it could have just been... they were a little bit sort of gammy, if you know what I mean. A little bit hammy, a little bit not really necessary at times. Some of Vader's cues weren't the best. I know that after listening to a couple of pods in the past, Pritchard said as well that people thought that Vader was meant to win that belt, was meant to take the belt off Shawn at that point. Not necessarily at that point, but at some point during that year, Vader was meant to pick up the belt. And to say that, no, you're not allowed to do it.
I think they're meant to have a trilogy where Sean would win at SummerSlam, then Vader would win at Survivor Series, and then he'd win it back at...
Sean back at the Rumble. There was meant to be that, but apparently Pritchard's kind of said that, no, that wasn't necessarily going to be the case. Mm. It depends on who you believe with that, because obviously You throw Sid into the occasion with all of that as well. Michaels didn't apparently like working with Vader. He didn't like him at all. He was maybe a bit too stiff, and he probably got fed up of having to tell him what to do during a match.
Yeah.
I want to throw it out there now and say that I can't imagine that Sid was probably that much better.
No.
Going to be honest, I loved Sid as a big man, a big powerbomb machine. I preferred Vader's out-and-out ruthless attack style against his opponents and not caring about the consequences. I like both guys, to be honest. I love what they both did. I would have liked to have seen Vader as the champion at that point to be that guy rather than Sid at that point, personally, for me. And then see what we could have done with Sid as well along that timeline. But it would have been interesting to see what Vader could have brought to the occasion as that ruthless, he'll do anything. It almost feeds into that ruthless, that doesn't care about authority concept that Austin came up with, let's mm-hmm. be honest. You know, it kind of, it feeds into that a little bit. So there was maybe more reason than one as to why Vader didn't get his run going forward. But yeah, unfortunately, it was kind of the end of Vader's dominance and superiority at the top of the chain as a heel, as a monster heel. That was kind of almost the end of it by that point at a main event level. So, bit of a shame, but for me, an absolutely brilliant display from Vader being his best monster self, Shawn being his best comeback kid against all odds, Shawn Michaels character.
Yes, definitely.
And put the two together, it was a really fun match.
I think just two things. Shawn's lucky that Vader was a gentle giant outside the ring, because he would have battered him for real.
I think Shawn was at the point where he had the earpiece. He could say what he wanted to, and things could happen whenever he wanted them to. It was at that. It was prime click, wasn't it? Let's be honest. You know, it was prime click at that point. Just following the departure of Nash and Hall.
Yes.
So then, all of a sudden, Shawn is the top dog, if you like. He can't do anything wrong, Vince. You could see Vince has just faded. Any time that Vince was doing the interviewing during sort of that late 95 period, 96 period, he just had this grin on his face like a Cheshire cat thinking, we're coming back! Coming back, boys! We've got Shawn at the helm! You know, it was that kind of... You just can't... He was constantly moist every time he was speaking to Shawn, because he knew his money, and he knew he'd get the best... He'd get a fabulous display of wrestling, and he printed money, and he could do what he wanted, he could do no wrong. So if Shawn said, I'm not working with him, he's rubbish, let's not push him, that was going to happen.
That's why Shawn's one of the lowest drawing champions of all time. just quickly about Sid, his entrance music, oh my gosh.
Oh, Sid's
chilled down my spine.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic.
And to be fair, just quickly again, loved both matches, Shawn Michaels versus Sid, and there's a really fantastic promo by Sid on the Royal Rumble. I don't know if it's on the WWE Network, but it's on the VHS tape. It's one of the best promos Sid's ever done.
Yeah, I fully agree. To be honest with you, I think up until that point, until he went to WCW and started making a few faux pas, I struggled to tell you, apart from them, are we live? That one, you know, the infamous forgot his lines, can we start again? No, we're live, pal! promo. I thought Sid was one of the best short promos of intensity that I've ever seen in WWF.
He was a very good shouty promo, wasn't he? You could actually understand what he was saying compared to some of the 80s
ones. Whispering and the fear.
Yeah.
That one, that fear promo, was one of my favourite promos probably ever, I think. It's in my top five. But Sid was... I want to retract something I said. I said it would have been good to have seen Vader in that role, that spot, that monster spot that Sid got. But at the same time, I fully agree with you, Oliver. I do not want to see Sid demoted out of that spot. So, yeah, tricky one. Sid was probably the right choice overall for that moment in time. But it's a shame that Vader didn't also get that run as a monster heel at some point with the belt at that time.
Do you know who would have been fantastic for that role, but he got ousted by the click? Bam Bam Bigelow.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, I fully agree. I think if you'd have repackaged Bam Bam a bit with an attitude and got rid of the sort of the silly fiery gimmick, if you know what I mean, and just sort of let him be pure intensity, let him be the fire, metaphorically speaking. Without the sort of, you know, he's got the head tats, you don't need a full singlet of flames, we get it. But I fully agree, I think that would have been fantastic. I mean, saying that, I fully enjoyed everything he did in ECW at that point, as well as with Candido and... Was that before or after? During when Bam Bam... Was he with Candido and Douglas at that point, as Triple Threat in ECW? I think it should be timelines, I'm not sure if it was at the same time or not, but... I think he enjoyed everything he did.
Might be a little
nice
bit after.
Yeah. But no, I agree. I think Bam Bam would have done that. I think, unfortunately, though, if Bam Bam had done that, it was one of those things where Vader was coming in as almost as the king heel of WCW, as the monster heel of WCW ex-champion. And he was coming in after as a new person, a year's streak of dominance, just smashing everybody to pieces, and then all of a sudden he's against Michaels. Yeah. And I thought that build was fantastic. That it was a year long creation to get Vader to the point of Monster Heel versus HBK, and that's what made the match more than anything else for me.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
Right, so my second match is Owen Hart versus Bret Hart in a steel cage for the WWF Championship, SummerSlam 1984. This is Bret's third appearance as well. That's
hey.
What does that tell you? Everybody said that Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels at the top was the dying years of WWF where nobody cared. Yeah.
Not at all.
I think the jealousy of Owen Hart for his brother Bret is one of the best storylines of all time.
The best, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. The best storyline ever.
Yeah, so
Didn't it start in late 93 and...
Yeah, it started at the
Survivor Series.
Owen was the only Hart eliminated in the Hart versus the Knight, Shawn Michaels' Knights. Yeah, so...
And it went through, like, when Backlund won the title, and then... I guess it went to like 97 when like the Hart Foundation reformed, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, amazing.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes, yeah, so Owen basically thought that the Hitman was getting all the accolades, getting all the attention, which he thought he should be due. So even though he beat his brother, he turned on his brother at Royal Rumble, then he beat him at WrestleMania 10 before Owen won the King of the Ring with the help of Jim Neidhart. So. Beating Bret at Mania and winning the King of the Ring wasn't enough for Owen. He wanted to take the title off the champion of Bret and show that he was the better brother. I didn't like all the family stuff in the crowd because none of them can act or do promos.
I did enjoy Jerry Lawler slagging off Stu Hart constantly, though. Bret Hart's family crack. But my Bruce Hart is an enigma, let's be honest. We'll have a Bruce Hart episode at some point.
Well, Jerry Lawler's commentary on the WrestleMania match is fantastic as well.
Vince actually wanted it to be Bruce in this position, but Bret went, "No, he's crap. I want it to be Owen. Owen's actually good."
Bruce tried to talk himself into a position, and then Bret talked. Amazing.
So chemistry was intense between the two siblings. It was incredible. They pulled out all the stops to make this a drama. They made it so it was escape only, which is quite unusual for a cage match. And there was, I think there was over 50 attempts to escape the cage, which you think would get really boring, but it didn't. But that was and finally, they were both on the outside of the cage. Then Bret threw Owen into the cage. His leg got stuck, trapped. And then he climbed down the big blue bars, and allowing Bret to eventually win. And I missed the big blue cage.
Yeah, I missed the big blue cage as well.
Yeah, and then after the match, Jim Neidhart and Owen threw Bret back in the ring and started beating down. And then all the Hart brothers started climbing up with Bulldog to get into the ring. It was a great moment.
It was. You're too damn selfish, Bret.
I sound like a soundboy then.
Practice, a lot of practice.
just two things with this. Is this one of, if not the greatest cage match of all time?
Yeah, I was just saying, you'd think an escape only cage match would be really boring, but it made them not, because if you was made it you could pin or submit, I think it would took it away from the intensity of the match, because they'd be trying to pin submit. They just had to batter each other and try and escape, so it just made it extra intense and made it feel like a feud ender match.
And secondly, should Owen Hart have been champion in 1994?
Would have been interesting if he won this match.
I'm going to say no, he shouldn't have been. I do think that the feud should have carried on longer, though. I think it should have carried on a bit longer, and even into the Hart Foundation, the later revival of the Hart Foundation with Pillman and everybody in core.
Yeah.
I would love to have seen Owen Hart do the whole ousting, much like Rocky did to Farouk in The Nation, that kind of thing where he ousts him out, and it's kind of like, what's this, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think that would have been hilarious to see.
That would have been incredible.
That concept come back into play. I want to say that I think that Owen Hart, after like following this feud with Brett, that created the whole Owen Hart that we know and love. Everything from that feud created Owen Hart going forward.
Yes,
definitely.
Everything. I mean, the whole.
I'm a winner.
The whole. I'm the now double Slammy award winning. Owen Hart, well, that all obviously came on the back of I won the accolades at Bret Scott.
Yes.
The whole I'm going to team with Yokozuna. Yes, he needed to make Yoko a tag because he could no longer compete singly because he was terrible. But Owen Hart tagging with Yoko, following the few the issues in '93 that Bret had with Yoko, was like an underlying extra kick in the ribs for me. I thought that was brilliant that he became the tag partner of Yokozuna.
Yeah, definitely.
After all the crack in the '90s, and then obviously the following that he became a tag team with their Bulldog as well.
Bulldog had a bad injury, so he couldn't do singles. So basically,
I think they could have pulled the trigger with Owen following that. Following that tag team expedition with Yoko and Bulldog, before he went into the whole Danger Owen Hart, which I wasn't greatly that bothered about, if I'm completely honest. It didn't do very much for me.
I didn't like
and
his Shamrock.
The whole Nation really. Owen Hart didn't do anything for me. He seemed to have just lost his space, and they were trying to filter him into anything which had any kind of momentum. I think that they should have pulled the trigger at that point. Following the Austin breaking neck angle, all of that stuff, around that time period, that's when they should have used Owen to catapult him into more of a main event. So do the tag team thing and then just throw him back into the mixer against whichever champion they were to at the time.
Yeah.
But I think that would have been a good idea. Not necessarily, again, recapturing the title, but I would love to have seen, as I mentioned before, sorry, just the whole Owen turn on Brett in that new foundation. Not the new foundation, but the Hart Foundation. The new foundation was something else completely different into the Hart Foundation revamp, if you like. And then watching the guys, including, you know, Pillman and Bulldog and Anvil, are all going to side with Owen in that. They will, because of the history and the tag teams and maybe not Anvil, but Pillman and Bulldog definitely would have sided with Owen. It would have been great. I'd have loved that.
So just quickly then, Mark. Do you think, just fancy booking-wise, that if Owen ousted Brett out of the Hart Foundation and Brett's allowed to continue to be the good guy, do you think he would have stayed with WWF in 1997?
It's interesting, because I thought, I mean, the heel angle that he had with Sean was good, but I mean, well, of course it was good, it was very good, but I mean, it would have been interesting to see what they could have done, how it would have, obviously have changed the landscape massively about who was doing what at the time.
Vince couldn't afford Brett, that's why he had to leave.
Say again?
Vince said he couldn't afford Brett, so that's why he went to WCW.
Yeah, I don't know how. Well, I mean, if WCW is going to offer a lot more money, if that's what it came down to, then nothing would have changed, would it? But Brett could have, you know, if you're selling a hell of a lot more t-shirts as a face, then there could have been some upside with the merch sales, I mean, potentially.
Yeah.
It's difficult to know, because you know, a lot of people are buying Hart Foundation t-shirts, but I'm getting split between five people then.
Yeah, so you said he couldn't afford.
I mean, I bet Hart's still taking 80% of the cut.
He said he couldn't afford Brett, but then he had Mike Tyson in the next year. So,
well, there you go. And he knew what he was doing. I think it would have possibly have, if Brett had turned face at that point and Owen had been the heel and he'd have gone with that sort of run, you'd have had to have done something different with Sean, and use a different heel for Sean at the time. Maybe you would have promoted Austin a bit earlier. I don't know. It's a tricky one. Maybe Hart would have stayed around a lot more. Would have changed the landscape massively. There would have been a big knock-on effect. But
Sean's the bad guy, though, isn't he? In 1987.
Oh, of course. Yeah, of course he was. Yeah.
Just getting feuding with Ken Shamrock.
put Big Kenny in there. Who was it? Another face at the time who you could have thrown in there with a bit of fantasy.
Austin, Ken Shamrock.
Austin, I suppose, came the year later. The Rock was...
But Rock and Shawn Michaels didn't get on.
Yeah, was Rock face at that point?
But he got ousted by Farouk, didn't he?
Yeah, it might have been a bit early.
We're going all over the place, yeah. But you know, it's a good chat.
Shall we
do our final match? So our the match that won the Twitter poll was SummerSlam 1992, Bret Hart versus the British Bulldog for the Intercontinental Championship. So
that was minus two.
You weren't even a pipe dream.
They weren't even thinking about you, Nick.
I watched this.
Oh, that sounded really harsh.
I watched this on holiday in Wales on a dodgy skybox in German.
I've watched this match tonight, actually, before the podcast. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, so it was an amazing backdrop of SummerSlam 92 because there's in front of 80,000 passionate British fans at Wembley Stadium, firmly behind the Bulldog as he looked to win the championship. So. And the amazing thing about this was that Bulldog had been up for 3 days smoking crack with Bridget Neidhart, and a minute into the match said, "Brett, I'm fucked. I don't remember anything." So Brett has to just talk him through the whole match. And it's still an amazing match.
And that's why he's the best there is. The best there was and the best there ever will be.
Yeah. So somehow he talked him through a 25-minute match and Bulldog couldn't remember anything. So.
Unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, at that point, Bulldog had the world in his hands. When was the steroid trial in 92? Was it in 91, the steroid trial, or 92?
93, 94, wasn't it?
94. So, well, that's when the testimony was given, but I can't remember when. So, yeah, basically, there was no excuses for... there was a steroid news story, sorry. There was stuff going on in 1992 regarding it all. But 1994 was when it was...
Sorry, Brett became the WWF champion by beating Ric Flair, didn't he?
92. Yeah.
So it must have been around that time.
Yeah, it was. And it's interesting to think that we're using Bulldog. It must have been at the back end, because that's maybe why they didn't pull the plug on Bulldog as much as they could have followed. Because that match was unreal, let's be honest. It was absolutely unreal, especially for the time period.
Imagine if we had a sober Bulldog in that match.
It created the boom in the UK for wrestling. That was the reason that event and that match is the reason that Hulkamania ran wild in the UK. Do you know what I mean? It was the reason why we got all the pencil cases, the curtains, the quilt covers, the pencil toppers, the rulers. It's the reason why the schoolyards were flooded with stickers because of that event. It's as simple as that. And that match was the pinnacle of it. Now, you don't just wash away the two guys in that. One of them looked like he was a legitimate athlete, the other one looked like he was a tank.
Yes.
And the one who and if that steroid trial hadn't have happened, I personally believe that Bulldog's run would have been very, very different following that match, and I think we would have seen a world champion out of that. I truly do.
And a British world champion. I think he would have been the world champion that we're still waiting for, aren't we?
Yeah, yes. I think he would have been the first British World WWF champion that we. I honestly do believe that. I think he would have gone down that route. I don't think he would have turned heel. I think Brett would have lost the belt to somebody, possibly to Yoko. Bulldog would have got that spot to slam him, not Lex.
Wow.
I think they're trying to calm the whole steroid thing down because of what was going on with the steroids. I think they tried to take the focus and the limelight off.
Take them off us.
Like Bulldog.
Okay, but doesn't Nick look like Bulldog?
I don't disagree with that. I think he looked leaner.
He was a lot smaller than he was in WCW.
He had shrunk a lot. I think he was off it as well. I might be wrong. But he was doing the WBF stuff as well, wasn't he? So they were kind of like, I don't know what the crossover was with that and what they were allowed to get away with and what they weren't. Because if he was tested for steroids, he could have said, oh, no, it's permitted in bodybuilding.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's a tricky one. God knows.
That's a
different podcast, guys. I tell you who would have. Pablo would know all about that. He'd tell you the answers.
Yes.
We'd have saved half an hour.
So I hope you enjoyed our top 10 SummerSlam matches. If you think we've missed any matches out, please email us bbgwpod@gmail.com or tweet us at bbgwpod.
Really, I think I've had this more of an education tonight. It's been really interesting. A lot of the matches before my time, but it's nice to hear obviously about them and hear the passion. So,
Oliver, do you want to plug your books before we go?
Plugged them in the show, but we'll do it again. Thanks to BrokenBookGlorious.com, we've got the Kindles available to buy directly from the site. Any article you click will have my books at the top of the page. My first book is a predominantly British wrestling book called Fan's Perspective, One Man's Exploration of British Wrestling. It's available on paperback and Kindle, signed on a fansperspective.bigcartel.com. For free on Kindle Unlimited, I get paid per page as you read in the first sitting. Second book is A Fan's Perspective 2016, What a Year to Be a Fan of WWE, and the details are exactly the same. The third book's A Fan's Perspective, How My Lifelong Dream Became a Nightmare, and that's based on my WrestleMania 24 adventure with meeting my childhood hero, Bret Hitman Hart, and fantasy booking Paul London to the main event, along with some other things. And just quickly going back to the 2016 book, every Raw, SmackDown Live, NXT TakeOver, pay-per-view, network special is all covered, all the major news stories and everything as well. And if you want to do this a different way, you can go and buy these books in-store at Pro Wrestling Cartel, who've been fantastic with me since they started up, and that's in Birmingham, England, in the Birmingham City Centre at the Oasis Market. So, yeah, thanks very much for your support, everyone.
Awesome, man.
Yeah, so we also have a partnership with powerslam.tv, where you can get a month's free subscription by using the promo code BROKEN3 to access promotions. Some of our podcast favourites are Riptide, North Wrestling, Progress. You can also go on to Combat Zone Wrestling, Rev Pro, Preston City Wrestling. So use the promo code BROKEN3 to get a month's free subscription. We have plenty of interviews coming up in the coming weeks. We've got Dean Nye coming out on Friday. We've got Kanji next week. RJ from the Ringside Rant is back on. Anything you want to plug, Mark?
Yeah, quickly as well. We've got a few different venues dotted around the UK where we're going to be throwing pay-per-view parties for SummerSlam on Sunday. Please go and check that out. You can check that out on Facebook at the Hooked on Wrestling events Facebook page. It's got a listing of all of the different cities we're going to be running at. We're going to be doing an AEW event as well this month, the first one, so that'll be grand. If you want to also, if you're a fan of retro gaming in general, you can check out our unofficial NERG fan page as well. We're running that at the moment and doing lots of retrospectives and reviews on retro gaming, including wrestling ones. So go check that out on Twitter at Grapple Arcade. All the news and different information, all the competitions and tournaments that we run on there, go and check us out on Twitter. And yeah, I think that's pretty much it, other than to say that we're really, really, really looking forward to the partnership with the BBG going forward.
Yes.
We can't wait to start getting the Turnchuckle content on there as well. We've got, might as well break the news now, we've got Paul Diamond coming on
Max
very
Boone.
Soon to to talk about his Max Moon expeditions and his time in Orient Express.
I was going to say Kato as well. Was it Kato?
It was Kato, yeah. That's right. So we'll have him on soon. I don't want to drop any other names yet that are planned, just because you know how these things work.
Yes.
And things might fall through. But we will say that we're in talks with an interesting major player from WCW during the sort of early and mid-90 period. Mm. So that should be cool if that pulls off as well, which we're hoping.
You've dangled the carrot.
We have indeed. I'll tell you guys off air.
Nick, you was about 5 then, so you wonder who it is.
So if you enjoyed our show, also check us out on Twitter, it's at BBGWpod, and same on Facebook and Instagram. And check out our website, brokenbutglorious.com. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.